But I am glad you're here this evening as we begin looking at the chapter concerning, and does your child's world scare you, concerning sex. That three-letter word that a lot of times we don't talk about, and a lot of times parents don't talk with their children about, especially as they are starting to approach adolescence and making all kinds of changes. That word that Jethro Bodine misunderstood when he was filling out the job application in an episode and said, and asked him, said, sex? He said, oh boy. But unfortunately, a lot of times that's what how people think. If you didn't get the teen dating violence handout last week, I still have a few of those that have to do with some factors concerning teen dating violence. Got one? Okay. And that kind of actually feeds into a little bit tonight's, or goes along with tonight's discussions. And I hope there will be some discussions. Instead of just quoting a bunch of statistics, you'll find that I listed some statistics here, although I have a few others. But I won't think as we go along. You can list out on a piece of paper, but I'd also like some input. What are, list things which will change in a teenager's life when she becomes pregnant. Everything. Well, yeah, that could sum it up, everything, but what are some of the specific things? Okay, not finish school. End of relationships?
Pure relationship.
End of pure relationship. Jim?
They often end up below the poverty line. And by getting, because they didn't finish school, they get less than a good job.
Okay. And often end up below the poverty line. Lesser jobs and sometimes unable to take any kind of full-time job because of caring for a child.
It's a repeating cycle.
It is a repeating cycle. Oftentimes. Not all in all cases, but depends on a lot on the support systems that are around them as to whether it's repetitious. If it's a And no, that's not an Easter egg, even though it's towards Easter. That's a vicious circle. Sad feeling for those birth parents, especially that birth mother.
Yeah. But then Tracy said that she had her children in school write an essay. And one girl chose to write her essay on, when they get rid of the child,
abortion. Not quite. Thank you, but I don't know quite everything.
Well, they said she had researched it, and she said that when, and Gretchen probably knows this too, when they do the abortion, it's terrible. That they, first of all, they suck all the brain out of that, and it is actually a baby at that time.
Well, it depends on which stage as to how what happens.
Second trimester.
Yeah.
This girl would use it.
Right. Second trimester. Dismembering. And once again, it depends on the trimester and all that kind of stuff as to what's going on with it. But that's true. The birth mothers, especially, and this gets into the repetitious cycle that Jeff mentioned, birth mothers that continue to have babies to adopt and have babies to adopt and have babies to adopt. It can almost, not always, it can almost seem like that's their chosen
field.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
but then I went back to maybe they didn't have any self-esteem to begin with.
Yeah, and that's one of the things the book talks about. One of the things that we'll talk about is self-esteem. Teenagers with low self-esteem are 6 to 7 times more likely to become pregnant. And in some instances, that for them is a way to boost their self-esteem because they're a mama. And so it does feed into that vicious circle. So there are a lot of things that get lost. All kinds of relationships, not just that pure relationship which is lost, but all kinds of relationships with parents, with peers, other kinds of situations as well. Over 1 million teenage girls become pregnant out of wedlock in the United States per year. More than 3 million teenagers, male and female, per year in the U.S. get sexually transmitted diseases of various kinds. More than 3 million a year, teenagers. If you look at some of the statistics here, in 2004, 46 out of every 1,000 births in the U.S. were to unmarried women ages 15 to 44, which was 36% of all the births in the U.S. 75% of teenage pregnancies are adolescents from a single parent home, whether that parent is just the mom or just the dad. 2008 survey done in various parts of the world, across the world, the percentages of 15-year-olds who said they had sexual intercourse varied by country, ranging from 14.1% in Croatia to 37.6% in England, and boys were more apt than girls to report that. In 2009, as is listed here among U.S. high school students surveyed, 46% had sexual intercourse. I put an extra word in there. 34% had it during the previous 3 months. 39% of these did not use protection, birth control, or other protection to prevent pregnancy the last time. And 14% of those U.S. high school students had a sexual relationship with 4 or more people so far in their lifetime. It's epidemic proportions. And you can see here in E, sexually risky behaviors or sexual risk behaviors place adolescents at risk also for HIV and other STDs as well as unintended pregnancy. In 2009, this comes from the CDC's reports, and these are the things reported. 8,300 young people aged 13 to 24 in the 40 states that reported to the CDC had HIV infections in 2009. Nearly half of the 19 million USTDs are among people aged 15 to 24. More than 400,000 teenage girls aged 15 to 19 gave birth in 2009, that's in the U.S. In South Carolina, 53 of every 1,000 births were to girls aged 15 to 19. The U.S. average was 41 out of every 1,000. Going back to your question from before, what about South Carolina? And there's some mixed news. In 1999, 54.1% of 9th to 12th graders said they were having sexual intercourse. In 2008, it had dropped to 46%. That's the good news. The mixed news is, in 2009, there was no change in that statistic. It was still that number, that amount. 2009 Youth Sexual Risk Survey, put out both by the CDC and another organization, 46% said that they had sexual intercourse. 6% had it for the first time before age 13. 14% had had sexual relations with 4 or more persons during their life. 34% had it with at least one person during the 3 months prior to the survey. And 39% did not use a condom. 13% were never taught in school about AIDS or HIV infections. And teen fertility rates in the U.S. are nearly double Great Britain. That doesn't mean we're more fertile. That means we're having more babies. Triple that of Scandinavia. Do what? We're having more of those things go on than Scandinavia? And 10 times that of Japan. Of course, in Japan, there are other issues there. If you have, it brings dishonor on your family, and you can have other consequences that come about because of that. And then this health services school survey you can look at. That was in 2010, conducted by health services. The peak time daily, if teenagers are going to engage in sexual activity, is after 6 p.m. Among 8th graders surveyed in the United States in 2008 and 2009, almost 80% of these events took place at the boys' home. That's not like the boys' home of the South. That's the boys' home. In the afternoon when the parents were working, or in the evening when parents were working. Or if the parents were, if they knew the parents were going out and were going to be gone out for an extended dinner or to a party, the evening was the peak time. And it was almost always at the home of the boys that this occurred. Parents of the girl more cautious than the parents of the boy? Not necessarily. But I think it's something of it's a combination of things. One thing may be, you know, the whole macho idea, well, I'll get her over here for such and such, or she'll come over to we'll study homework. And they decide that they're not going to study war anymore. They're going to, well, the old thing in the hippie era, make love, not war. Well, yeah, but that's changed today. Oh, the boys came to your house.
When my children were growing up,
right,
the thing to do was for the kids to go into the bedroom. Mine were never allowed to do that.
Right.
They brought friends home. They either had to go to the living room, the inner playroom, or outside. But they were not allowed to be in their room by themselves with a member of the opposite sex.
Right.
Okay.
Oh, well, yeah, and when I was dating, the girls came to our house, and we had to sit in the living room. And the door might be closed on one end, but it wasn't closed on the other end. My mother could go to the bathroom through her bathroom that or through her bedroom that way, but she always came through this door and walked straight through the middle of the living room. So I do understand those things. I just happened to see some coffee here on the floor, and it's nicely, freshly waxed floor.
I don't understand how mothers, I know that some parents just want to watch a TV, but mothers, it looks like they would, do they think their children are so perfect they're not going to do anything?
Well, and in today's society, you know, I'm not a mom, so I don't know, but in today's society, there's just a lot more, seems to be a lot more laxity about things, more relaxed. And whether it's trusting or you get too busy to pay attention, you know, those things happen. I don't know. Maybe you all have some other ideas. When I was growing up, and of course, when I was growing up, what did you have on the TV commercials or the ads in the magazines and all that kind of stuff? You had women in scantily or scanty bathing suits, not anything like now that you see on the commercials. But you still had, you know, women were used to sell cars, to sell guns, to sell cigarettes, except for the Marlboro Man. And you never know about him behind those caps.
But you know, you never seen him in like a Victoria's Secret commercial for women in their underwear on commercial.
Yeah. And it's rampant, it's everywhere, it's on the billboards. Yeah. It used to here. That's right, Francis. It used to here. Right, right. Well, and you know, and of course, now when I was growing up, the thing, Dillon, South Carolina, was famous or infamous in and around Burlington, North Carolina. Yeah, I hear that, Hazel. But Dillon, South Carolina, was famous or infamous because that's where people ran off to get a quickie marriage. In high school, et cetera, they came right across to Dillon, and there were wedding chapels and all, and that's where they went to get married, and then they'd come back across. We had friends, the Moores, who got married when they were in high school. They went across the line to Dillon, I think, or somewhere along there, got married. They're a few years older than us, but got married. And then when they came back, they ended up actually living with their parents, except on weekends they'd go shack up somewhere. You know, they didn't tell their parents until they graduated from high school. They got married as juniors and didn't tell them until their senior year when they graduated from high school. They got married when they were juniors in Dillon, South Carolina. Yeah, they did. They did. They did. And that's the thing these days. You look at, and on the handout here, kind of jumping down to number four, you know, there are all kinds of things on TV. It's rare that we have, you know, I heard on the news or on TV earlier today, commercials that watch America's favorite number one television show, 2.5 Men. I hadn't seen more than a half dozen episodes of that ever, but part of the whole appeal of the show was Charlie Sheen's character was always trying to hop in and out of bed with different women. Well, yeah, well, there were times that he was trying to, and whether he was successful or not. Or I mentioned down here, even in addition to the heterosexual, and one of the young adults asked a question recently, said, what do we do when our children are exposed to alternative sexual relationships as well, and they're all in the schools, etc.? Well, I have not seen an episode of either of these shows. I have seen commercials, and I've read articles about them, and I've seen the folks on TV, the kid in Glee who is openly gay in the show and is says that he is openly gay, and he was up for an Emmy as an supporting actor for the show Glee, and of course the woman who plays the lead on the show isn't a lesbian on the show, but in real life she is, and in one of the states, California or somewhere, recently got married to her partner and that kind of thing. But Glee pushes that all the time. Modern Family, I have never seen Modern Family, but I have read articles. Modern Family is a conglomerate. There are unmarried folks that are living with each other, male and female. There are adoptive children, and there's a gay couple. And it's entitled Modern Family. And on and on and on we could go. A survey of 7th and 8th graders in the Midwest found more bullets. Now, we're talking about the Midwest. One state in the Midwest. There were several thousand that were interviewed who claimed to be either lesbian, gay, bisexual, but found considerably more bullying. They were 2 times more likely to attempt suicide. They were more likely to use drugs or be treated for depression than their heterosexual counterparts. Now, that doesn't mean that heterosexuals don't, children and all don't end up in that kind of situation either. But, and so there's all this exposure, and I don't know about you all, but when I was growing up, I knew very few that were. I knew a couple of folks that were. Beat one of them to a pulp at church one Wednesday night after RAs. Well, I did. After RAs, because he made a pass at me. And I just, I jumped him and was pounding him into the dirt because I was insulted. But back then, if it was determined that someone was gay, we used a different word to talk about them, but if someone was gay, they got bullied. They got ostracized. But, you know, and some of that happens today, and I'm not saying that's right. I'm not saying it's right to ostracize and bully like that, but at the same time, you have to question the condoning. You also have to question the penalties. This parent said to me recently, my children know folks who claim to be, and they try to tell them it's wrong, but they'll get in trouble if they tell them it's wrong with the authorities. Because it might be harassment or bullying. So, you know, there are all kinds of things that our teens are facing, not just teen pregnancy, but all kinds of things that they're facing. And it sometimes makes us wonder, what do we do? I thought it was interesting, this 2010 Health Services School Survey, across the United States, 69% of the schools, public and private, this is a public and private school survey, 69% of them in 2010 required students to receive instruction on health topics as part of a specific course. 28% in that, in the health education courses that were required of students, taught 11 pregnancy, HIV, or STD prevention topics, and yes, some of that was involving the use of protection, etc. 87% taught abstinence as the most effective method, even though they taught there were other options out there. 87% of them said the most effective method to avoid STDs, HIV, unwanted pregnancy is total abstinence. And that's not just private schools, that was public schools as well. And 85% taught how HIV is transmitted. Now, the other, depending on how you want to view it, the other side of that is that 39% of them taught students how to properly use a condom in high school. The unfortunate thing is sometimes it's not a question of if teenagers are going to experiment, but when. And you know, it only takes one time to be in, for timing to be off to end up with any of those, whether it's sexually transmitted diseases or an unwanted pregnancy. In looking at the biblical texts, and then we'll talk a little bit about what do we do? How can we deal with these kinds of things? Obviously, the very first thing that comes to mind when people think about sexual activity, and in particular, among men and women, one of the first places people go is to where in the Old Testament? Well, Ten Commandments is probably closely followed by number two, which is Genesis. God creates male and female. Whether it's Genesis chapter 1, which is written about 587 B.C., or this way, and God says, let us create Adam in our image. Image of God created he them. Male and female created he them. And told them to be fruitful and multiply. Or whether it's Genesis chapter 2, which is actually written around 1000 B.C., where God creates the man, Ahama, and then plants the garden, makes the animals, and then makes Isha, woman, for she came from Ish, man. And by the way, that's how they knew each other, and that's what they called each other before we later get the proper names of Adam and Eve. It's only after the fall they become proper names. Before that, he said, woman, and she said, man. And there or the Ten Commandments about committing adultery. I still remember teaching a class, and when I would teach Old Testament later, I would tell students down here, I want to tell you right now, yes, this is what it means, but I still remember teaching a class up in the northern end of Greenville County and standing there. And there's some tones y'all know I don't hear. I've told you that, but I can hear whispering a lot better than I can hear some other things. Some people talk to me face to face. And I'm standing there, we're talking about the Ten Commandments, and I said, when we get to thou shalt not commit adultery, I said, of course, number one, it could lead to the one before it if you do, which is thou shalt not murder. I said, adultery is a catch-all for both sexual relationships between people who are married but not married to each other, and fornication, which is premarital sex. And in the back of the room, this young woman, and this is about how loud she said it, but she didn't think anybody would hear. And we're talking about a big classroom, and I'm up at the front. She says to her neighbor, "You mean what my boyfriend and me are doing is wrong?" I didn't even look that way. I just said, "Absolutely." She turned about five shades of red as she slid down in her seat, and everybody turned around and looked. And I thought, well, the cat's out of that bag. Is that the deacon's daughter or the Baptist preacher's daughter? Anyway, it was either a Baptist preacher's daughter or a deacon's daughter. I can't remember which at the time. But, yes. But people go there because you've got adultery, breaks that relationship of family, breaks those ties. Fornication creates issues before that as well. Or you go back to Genesis chapters 1 and 2. God creates male and female, and they are to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Later, divorce is allowed, but it's only allowed for the men. And that wasn't very progressive. And it wasn't very nice because women were considered property. And it's only later on, as they start becoming less, considered less and less so, and Jesus himself elevates the position of women to the equality. You know, the sin in the Garden of Eden, according to Genesis chapter 2 and 3, sin actually occurs in 3, but they talked about it in 2, because God said, whatever you do, if you don't want to die, don't eat off this tree. Well, if we weren't supposed to have to choose why I put the tree in there, why I call attention to it, right? But in chapter 3, the sin is not complete until they both participate, and they both participate. The big, strong, strapping man stands there and watches the woman do this because God had said you'll die, and he wants to see it. And when she doesn't get the least bit sick, she doesn't fall down dead, he says, oh yeah, sure, let me in on some of that. But it's not complete until they both do. But even in sin, even in that initial sin, they're together. They're not separate. And interestingly enough, the text does say in chapter 2, after God creates the woman and brings her to the man, and he says, whoa, man, this is great. She shall be called whoa, man. No. It says, for this reason, notice it doesn't say, although sometimes people do, it doesn't say, for this reason a woman shall leave her mother and father, but it says a man will leave behind that. And they're complementary. There's not a hierarchy until after the fall. The hierarchy that comes about in society and in some religious traditions has absolutely nothing to do with creation, everything to do with the fall. We messed ourselves up. And then we find the ideal is throughout the Old Testament, but even more so in the New Testament, even with Paul, the ideal is to remain married one to another, even if it's a believer and a non-believer who are married. The ideal is still to do that, though there are instances where divorce may be the only option. Leviticus chapter 18, even in the law. Yes, folks who went through Leviticus chapter by chapter, we're going to go back to Leviticus, that rather bloody book. But in Leviticus chapter 18, there are all kinds of rules and regulations about proper sexual behavior and who you're not supposed to be involved with, including your own kin, especially not your mama or your sisters or your daughters or any of that kind of stuff. Even your father's wife's daughter, and that doesn't necessarily mean your natural sister, that means even your stepsister. Well, shoot, I guess Bobby Christina and her adopted brother just gonna have to stop hanging out together. Saw that on the news the other night too. But verse 20, you shall not have sexual relations with your kinsman's wife and defile yourself with her. That's adultery. Your kinsman's wife, that's like your cousins, all those kinds of folks. You shall not give any of your offspring to sacrifice them to Molech, and so profane the name of your God. You shall, and then we go verse 22, you shall not lie with a male as with a woman, for it is an abomination. Of course, you're also not supposed to hang out with animals either. Verse 23, for such purposes. In Leviticus, there's more about sexual relations in chapter 19. In Leviticus chapter 20, starting with verse 10, if a man commits adultery with the wife of his neighbor, both the adulterer and the adulteress shall be put to death. Interesting how when Jesus' time came around, who was it that was brought to him? Not the man, but the woman caught in the act of adultery. But then it goes on, the man who lies with his father's wife has uncovered his father's nakedness. Both of them shall be put to death. Their blood is upon them, and on and on. And then you move further down into verse 13. If a man lies with a male as with a woman, both of them have committed an abomination. They should be put to death, and their blood is upon them. There were very serious kinds of things. We all know about the story of Sodom. And there are those who say Sodom is about sexual relationships, men to men, women with women. And men with women that they weren't married to. Although I do know others, including a Baptist minister in the upstate who happens to have a son who is gay, who says it's not so much, Sodom's not so much about homosexual relationships as it is about a lack of proper hospitality being shown. Romans chapter 1. Well, I had to tell you that because, you know, I got to tell you both sides of things. We've had some interesting discussions. Interesting discussions. Romans chapter 1. Here the Apostle Paul is writing. And starting in, he's talking about the guilt of humanity. And in chapter 1, starting in verse 24. Therefore, God gave them up in the lusts of their hearts to impurity, to the degrading of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this reason, God gave them up to degrading passions. Their women exchanged natural intercourse for unnatural, and in the same way also the men, giving up natural intercourse with women, were consumed with passion for one another. Men committed shameless acts with men and received in their own persons the due penalty for their error. So biblical texts talk about those issues pretty openly. We don't often do so. And says some pretty strong things. But it also says some pretty strong things about heterosexual relationships that are not to be carried out, especially in the book of Leviticus and other places. Homosexual activity is considered sinful, wrong, an abomination according to the biblical text. But guess what? Heterosexual sexual activity that is outside of marriage is considered wrong, sinful, and an abomination as well. And somehow, and I guess that's the question for the next 6 or 7 minutes, how do we get to this point where we can cut down on, or we can help our children and our grandchildren and our friends' children get to the point where they can kind of take a stand for themselves, a proper stand for themselves. Some of this is in the book. I'm going to add some things to it. It's also on your sheet here. This circle is teen pregnancy, and here are suggested ways: relationships with parents, self-esteem, school success, watch the media messages talking and teaching about premarital sex and postponing dating. Stephen says Sydney, he'll check out her dates when she's 33 and starts dating, but we know that's not really going to happen. And we got all of these things. And on the other side, you've got something that can absolutely overcome all of these, and that's peer pressure. If parents are parents, children are your children, not your buddies. If they went out, we kept theirs.
Yeah, until 5 years ago, David Hunt was not allowed to spend the night at Jeff Coast.
Yeah, Kenny and Mary Helen, no, he couldn't spend the night at Jeff Coast, had to spend it somewhere else.
Spend the night at her grandparents' house. Yeah. We lived in Greenville, they lived in Anderson. So if it was a late night, he had to spend the night at grandparents. He was not allowed to spend the night at Jeff Coast.
Yeah. Right. But all these things and all that peer pressure not only puts the questions here, what does it mean emotionally, medically, economically, spiritually? It costs us economically big time in the United States. It costs us emotionally. And that can cost monetarily as well with all of the different mental hospitals and those kinds of things. And all of the emotional trauma that then ends up, children end up in with psychologists, etc. It costs medically because of all the different things. It costs us spiritually as well. A lot of times when teens are active like this and then there is an opportunity for them to come clean and to get back in church, a lot of times they're afraid to get there because they're afraid people are going to look down on them and treat them differently. We need to, but what can we do? Build closer relationships between parents and children, but how do we do that? Be interested in what they do. Yes. And yeah, know what they do. That's right, Maxie.
You know, anybody that says that you let them go to this, that
you okay, yeah. Get to know the kids and, if at all possible, maybe even the parents of the kids. Well, and I think with parents, in all of these, with parents, with teachers, with other folks, and people have a hard time sometimes trusting clergy because of all the things that you see out in the media. And a lot of times what happens is you find people who end up, if they were abused or sexually abused, and they end up in relationships with other people who are heterosexual or homosexual relationships with other people as adults, then they will oftentimes look to younger folks and groom them. We talked last time about grooming for abuse. They'll look to groom them and try and bring them along and make it seem like it's their fault, which comes to the next one. Work on child self-esteem. Work on a child's self-esteem. The closer relationship of parents with the children, studies show, reduces the likelihood of teen pregnancy by 42%. Self-esteem, we mentioned earlier, teens with low self-esteem are 6 to 8 times more likely to become pregnant or to become involved in, even higher than that, become involved in other sexual behaviors that don't necessarily lead to pregnancy. Work on their self-esteem. Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean we praise them for the mediocre. But that means we do talk with them and help them to understand what is good that they do. And you don't tell them, as we've said before, don't tell them you're a bad kid, but what you've done is a bad thing. And here's how you correct it, and here are good things that you do. Encourage success at school. Here, studies show an inverse correlation between school success and teenage pregnancy. just think, you know, you can go on and you can do this and you can be this and you can go to college and maybe even beyond. Whereas this cuts down on that opportunity. Monitor media messages. The book talks about movies and television and TV shows imply sexual relationships. Back then it was 10. The latest studies, TV shows imply sexual relationships 15 times more outside of marriage than in monogamous marriage relationships. Of course, when we grew up, Ricky and Lucy slept in separate beds. Makes you wonder how the kids ever ended up getting born. But in the Cleaver it's the same way. But TV shows imply sexual relationships 15 times more outside of marriage than monogamous. 80% of sex on TV is between unwed persons. This is my little thing. I'm poking fun at those people that can't help but watch the soap operas. They've watched the same one for 30 years. Soaps lead the way. It's not very clean, huh? So much for that soap. But then we've got the soap operas spinning over into the teenage movies. I've not seen a single one of them. I haven't read a book. I've seen commercials. I've talked to people that have watched the Twilight movies, and basically it's a soap opera among vampires. Talk candidly about premarital sex. That's a tough one. That's a tough one. I still remember when I talked with the boys at particular ages when they were coming along, and it wasn't all that easy to do. Less than 20% of mothers and less than 10% of fathers discuss premarital sex with their children. Where are they going to learn it? On the streets. On the streets, or if we don't talk to them about it, they're going to learn it on the streets or in the back of a car or in a back room somewhere. And they're probably going to learn the wrong kind of stuff. Talk candidly. Now, that's hard to do. That is hard to do. Think back for you who have had children, who have had that talk with them. Wasn't the easiest thing in the world to do. And how defensive did your children get? You don't have to. I don't do any of that. But you're more likely not to if we talk about it. Encourage the child to talk. Encourage your child to ask questions, to tell you what they're thinking, and give them a sense. Keep calm. Keep a calm attitude. If all of a sudden you get defensive and brusque and blow up, what do you think the odds are they're going to come to you with anything ever again? Much less that. Use words that they can understand. Use words that they can understand. Listen to what they say, figure out where they are, and use words that the child can understand. By the way, that going back, and I just happened to think, because Robert mentioned last week a doctor who talked at a meeting he went to about social media, and my eye popped back here again, and I had written down to talk about social media, and I only did TV and movies. Bad news to have TVs in kids' bedrooms. Worse news to have a computer in a kid's bedroom. Should be out, Robert said, the guy, you know, should be out where it can be seen, it can be watched, it can be monitored, all that kind of stuff. Cell phones, smartphones, iPhones, iPads, all that kind of stuff need to be checked. Facebook. And quite frankly, I don't check Facebook. I check Facebook. I don't friend very many people simply because I don't have time to know if somebody's got a headache or they're headed to the bathroom for the fourth time during the day. But there are all kinds of things posted on Facebook that should never be out there. And all these people that get caught because they're on Facebook or they're on some other internet site and they go downtown to meet some 13-year-old girl, you know, and they're 40, 45 years old, and it turns out to be, thankfully, it turns out to be an undercover cop. But still, there's far too much of that that goes on. A lot more than ever gets reported. A lot more than ever gets caught. So watch the social media. Watch the computers. Don't know if you need to go this far, but somebody was telling me the other day there's an app you can get Well, no, I was reading a story. The guy, there's an app you can get on your phone. I'm sure you pay dearly for it. And he said, even though his children are both in colleges, one in New England and one on the West Coast, and he lives in the South, he pays for this app that any time they send out any kind of text or pics message, guess what? He gets copied on it immediately. Of course, then you got trust issues with the child. But talk candidly. And keep a sense of humor about the fact that you might be a little uncomfortable, because you know your child's going to be uncomfortable. I still remember starting the conversation with one of ours and said something, and he said, "Oh, I already know that, Dad. I already heard that from so-and-so." Fortunately, so-and-so had told him the right stuff and not the wrong stuff. But, you know, I was uncomfortable. And actually picked fishing to talk with one of them and picked playing basketball to talk with the other one. And if you know anything about either of my two children, you can pick out the one that's playing basketball. And relate sex to words like love, caring, respect for yourself, and respect for other people. Now, these don't always work. There are still things that happen. But they're opportunities. Be open but not judgmental when you share your values. And give reasons behind the values. Don't just say, "Well, because I'm the mommy, that's why." Sweatshirt you used to have. "Because I'm the mommy, that's why." Or, "Because I'm the daddy and I got a big belt." No. You need to not be judgmental in sharing your values, but also listen to your child. And when they ask questions, don't say, "Well, you're not old enough to understand that." Find ways to explain the values. Talk about responsibility and consequences of not being responsible. Now, we can do this on any topic with children and grandchildren and friends' children. That doesn't mean that they're not going to make their own mistakes and their own choices. There are many times that I said to my boys, our boys, "Now listen, don't make this mistake, because I've already been there, and I'm telling you, it's not going to turn out good." Not every time, but there were several times when, guess what? They went ahead anyway and found out that it wasn't so good. But talk about responsibility and talk about consequences. Talk about being a responsible person with all of this. And of all things, another New Testament passage. When we talk about any of these things, come on, Ephesians, I know you're in here. Remember that when we talk about any of these things, Ephesians chapter 4, verses 14 and 15 and 16. We must no longer be children, so when we talk to them, don't act like children. Tossed to and fro, blown about by every wind of doctrine, by people's trickery, by their craftiness and deceitful scheme. Okay, that's about something else. But here's the key verse. But speaking the truth in love, we must grow up in every way into Him who is the head, into Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and knit together by every ligament with which is equipped, as each part is working properly, promotes the body's growth and building itself up in love. Speaking the truth in love about these issues. Not with hatred, not with brusqueness, not with an, "By golly, if you ever, I'm gonna," attitude. Mary's one of her movies that she knows about every line in, and I know about every song in, because ABBA was a pretty good group, but sometimes I walk in and say, "Not again. Mamma Mia." And in that movie, late in the movie, Meryl Streep's daughter's getting married, supposedly. And Meryl Streep, and he said, "You know, Mom, but you did wonderful things, and you raised a kid all on your own. And yeah, you got pregnant out of wedlock, but you raised a kid all, and you did a great job." And she said, "Well, that's because I had to. Because when my mama found out she was pregnant, she said, 'You can never come back to this house again, ever.' She said, so I had to." That wasn't speaking the truth in love. That wasn't, and it doesn't mean that you're condoning what has happened, but it does say something about relationships and about being there to help find together the way through difficulties. and trials. And after all, in that model prayer, when Jesus says, "And lead us not into trial or temptation, but deliver us from evil," that prayer, you're actually asking that God would deliver you by helping you find your way through to something that is whole and better on the other side. Yes, I've run over. Yes, it's 5 till. And yes, the choir needs to get next door. We'll start with any other questions that you might have about this, or any observations that you might have. I appreciate the input that you all have given this evening. It's not an easy subject to talk about. The church hasn't talked about it very much for a lot of the church's existence, but it's something that we especially need to always have, but especially need to even today. Next time, we will move forward into the next chapter. Economic woes. Economic issues. I believe that's the next chapter, if I remember correctly. Yes, it is. Mommy, buy me something! Okay. Yeah. Grandmary, can I have... And it's not just Grammy. At the time she looks up, she says, "Granddoc, will you get me one of those?" We were at the beach last year and coming back walking with the beach around July 4th, and then we went over. David and Kristen and their friends were on Alcom. Thank you. We went to Sullivan. We stayed at Shin Creek and went to Sullivan and went over there. We'd been out on the beach and walking back, and I'm carrying Sydney because she's really tired. As we're going by, there's this house right there looking over the dunes. And she said, "Granddoc, that's a pretty house." I said, "Yes, it is, Sydney. It's a very nice house." And then she looked at me with those big brown eyes and said, "Granddoc, would you buy me one like that?" And this is where you get careful. I said, "Sydney, Granddoc promises you that if he is ever in a position where he can afford to buy you a house like that, he will." And she said, "Okay." That's the case where you use words they don't understand. But God bless you. Go in peace. Amen.